welcome to Talking in Stations. It is the 13th of May. I am not Matterall, but Pothley Matterall is doing Mother's Day today. So he's off with, I think it's a nice breakfast with his family, doing his duty there. So instead, you've got me. We have a fantastic guest list today. We have ProGod legend from Test, Elise Randolph from PL, Harvey Skywalker, also from BL. We have CSM candidates, moderator from Snuff, and Brisk Battle from The Initiative. And then finally, we have a new and upcoming FC from Goonswarm, Whisper Quietly. We have a ton to get through today, so I'm just going to run straight into it. Of course, immediate thank you to McLeod and Kaskora for running the stream and the website, respectively. Now, let's start. So the first thing we're going to talk today about is the Goon invasion of the North that's going on. Or not invasion, I don't know what you want to call it. Like, nerds and Eve can get kind of angry about calling something an invasion or a war or not. So let's move past that. But so Whisper, the first thing I want to ask you is less about the fight itself that just took place, but about the more kind of overarching theme. Because originally the first kind of main thrust of the Imperium retaliation against the North was that the Hakonan deployment, where kind of like a big song and dance was made, tons of dreads were brought up, lots of memes went on, lots of publicity went on. Whereas there's been a kind of a change in approach, at least that I've seen, where instead of going, everyone's deploying, it's a big old deployment and stuff, it was a couple Reaver groups and then kind of just this slow, crawl, more subtly around, kind of clockwise around the Eve map. What's your opinion on kind of this, like, this change of approach from the big declaration and noise and song and dance about it to kind of the more slow, gradual ramping up of forces?
Well, personally, I actually don't have too much to say on that, simply because I've actually only been up there, you know, recently. They were already up in the North by the time I, you know, started playing the game. So while I have seen, you know, a move up or two head up that way, I don't really have too much that I can say about that whole what it was like before versus what it's like now. You know, like the most recent thing that I've noticed, you know, I'm in one of the northern groups, you know, one of the Reaver-like groups, like you said. And, you know, I mean, we've got our pings that are constantly going out to go do things and whatnot. So definitely I see the activity is kicked up maybe from where it was like a month and a half or two ago. So my kind of take on that is just that we're getting a little more active up there. You know, there's more things to do more often, it seems like.
Do you call yourselves the Asher Boys? Because that's what I call you in my head.
I don't call us anything. I'm sure that maybe somebody has got a name somewhere floating around there that they call us.
The Asher Boys. I like it.
Cool. So, before we go into the specific story of the fight and Whisper's specific story, I want to ask Elise and ProGod, who are both kind of like, you guys have a ton of experience of seeing different campaigns roll through Eve and wars of various forms through the history of Nullsec. What is your guys' kind of take on kind of the new Imperium approach to putting pressure on the Northern region?
I mean, last time they tried to do a big deployment, it was Hakonan, and they got kind of pooped on a little bit. And when you make these huge declarations of, oh, I'm going to go do this, it's going to be fantastic, you're putting a lot on the line in terms of morale, right? If you go up there with just a few groups, which is essentially all this is, it's just a few special interest groups going to get some good fights, then, you know, you don't really set off a lot of alarms and you could have like really good fights. And that's exactly what they're doing, really.
It's more
fun than like, oh, we're going to grind this, we're going to do this, herf, blurf, full power KTA. You can just shoot dudes. It's way better.
Yeah, and I think in the new era of Eve, when everyone needs to Vorkel mine in their home space and things like that, it's and you have to kind of live in your home space and keep ADMs up, just putting constant pressure on people is almost a better way to break them than trying to straight out invade them and kick them out of their space in the beginning. I mean, the old days, you really only needed to live in one system and you could throw everything in carriers and deploy across Eve on a weekend. But now, like, if you can't, you know, dislodge someone from dropping all your Vorkels and living next to you and fucking you up every single day, your people are going to eventually get frustrated. And, you know, you see that they've had corp thefts, all kinds of stuff like that. It The slow burn is much stronger than it used to be.
At least from the initiative perspective, I think from us, we've only been forward deployed about 2 weeks, but it's been fun. I mean, the whole idea behind us being up there is really just to have fun. And whether we put pressure on GOTG, we fight them as much as we possibly can. But as far as, at least as a line monkey, I am not aware that we have any higher strategic goals other than let's have some fights and see what we can do up in the north.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose in that way, it almost has this parallel running to the PL deployment to Providence that happened a bit earlier, in that generally speaking, and I'm sure Elise will back me up on this, is that when PL deploys somewhere, it's because this is a place where we can probably get a lot of fights. And sometimes, say it's against Brave Newbies or someone else, we accidentally the region from them, and we accidentally kind of crush an alliance or someone. That, you know, that happens from time to time. But kind of that initial deployment is kind of just, this is going to be a really fun thing for us to do for the next couple of weeks, couple of months. But then if you keep poking and things start happening, then kind of like that ball starts rolling and more things can potentially happen in some cases. Anyway, let's move on to Whisper's specific story, which is really, really cool and interesting. In that Whisper, you are, as you mentioned, very young in the game, kind of a new and upcoming FC. I'd love to hear just very briefly your story of from kind of the first time you ever even heard about what FCing was to what took you to the point where suddenly you are handed the keys to a Hurricane fleet in the X-70 Fortizar attack by the Imperium, mostly Goons and Initiative, against that NC Fortizar.
Yeah, so I downloaded the game end of November. You know, I had looked at it multiple times, just, you know, never downloaded it. And I always ask my friends, you know, hey, how's Eve? And they're all like, oh, it sucks, you shouldn't play, you know. And then I was just bored of the game I was playing, so I downloaded Eve. You know, joined some no-name corp out in the middle of nowhere for about a month. And then somebody else that I used to play ARC with actually came on and said, hey, you should join Goon Swarm. I'm in Goon Swarm, you know. So I said, sure, why not, you know. Joined up with Karma Fleet. And I'd say probably about a month or so after I joined into Karma Fleet, I heard about the Skirmish Commander program for FCing, and so I signed up for that, you know, and got accepted in, started leading, you know, comrade fleets, claw fleets, whatever, just, you know, little fleets across catch and whatnot, trying to catch Brave while they're ratting or something like that, and, you know, just started a bunch of those smaller fleets and slowly progressed into, you know, maybe slightly bigger fights every once in a while. But as far as getting to the point where it came to like X7, I would say that before X7 happened, probably the largest fight I had been involved in was, or FCing at least, was we went into LOSEC, you know, tackled a couple of Rorquals. Turned out that they were either PL or PH AltCorp Rorquals. So we had capitals dropped on us in response, which we weren't exactly expecting, because I'm like, oh, Rorquals in LOSEC, you know. And so that was a small bit of a fight for a bit. And then we, you know, I had FCs way bigger than me, way more experience, came in and took over. And, you know, we killed a couple of the things that got dropped and then left. So, yeah, as far as, like, all the experience I had before that, I didn't have too much in the way of battling capitals. So when X7 came around, I essentially had been on all day. I think that even that same day I had gotten really bored and dropped my Hawfit Dread on some NC and Tosising that was happening, and got it killed to bombers, but I had a lot of fun doing it. So there was a ping that went out, you know, saying, hey, we need somebody to run this op, and I volunteered to do it, and a couple hours later, next thing I know, they're telling me, cool, you're taking the Hurricane Fleet, you're going up to X7, and you're helping, you know, some of the Northern SIGs take out a Fortizar. Like, sounds good. And that's about all I had really been told about it at that point. So going up to X7 was, I don't generally gate, you know, that many times in a slow ship, so this is maybe a bit of a trip to get up there, but once we did, it was definitely, with, you know, working with different SIGs and stuff like that, which is something I haven't usually done. it was definitely a different experience than what I'm used to, because, you know, instead of just having myself and maybe a backup FC, it's myself working with two or three other FCs to get something done.
If you ask kind of the older FCs in the game from like any period and say, what was the kind of the most fun FCing in the game? What was the most fleet combat in the history of the game? Typically speaking, what you get from them is the era when they started and first fell in love with FCing, because after that point, you kind of have that experience and you kind of see more of how the sausage is made and more of kind of like what makes the fight. So there's less mystery and less guile to it.
I wouldn't necessarily say that.
I've heard it in some cases. So what would you say, Whisper, as a young FC, where in a game where like a lot of people complain about like, oh, this is, you know, it's terrible. It was so much better in 2010, 2012, and 2014, and in 2016.
Right.
What for you is the thing that made you fall in love with FCing? What stylistic stuff is it? Like, what is so cool, and what makes you fall in love with FCing EVE in the year of our Lord 2018?
man, so I'd say that probably what makes me really like FCing and like continue to want to FC is I think just after my first couple of fleets, you know, while the first fleet was absolutely terrible, we whelped horribly, killed almost nothing, you know, as is probably expected. A lot of people were like, hey, look, man, I had a lot of fun. You know, like we may have completely gotten annihilated, but I had a lot of fun. And that seemed to be like a reoccurring theme for most of the fleets that I was running afterwards. Was, you know, that was a lot of fun, that was a lot of fun, that was a lot of fun. And so just knowing that, you know, whether it's 20 people, 50 people, 150 people, knowing that everybody else is having fun and I'm also having fun, that for me was just like awesome. You know, if I can create a 2-hour window where 150 people are having fun, then, you know, I'm going to keep doing it.
Awesome. And I realize I phrased that fairly poorly, and ProGod's right to pick me up on it. But yeah, what I meant to say is that a lot of people who kind of come through and have spent a lot time in the game is that they're kind of like, they have rose-tinted glasses to their first falling in love, and they will see that as kind of like a better time comparatively, and they always want to go back, and which is why we hear so many people say EVE was at its best at different regions, because that might be when they started and when they first initially fell in love with the game. So like, ProGod, Elise, tell us about like kind of your kind of when you fell in love with FCing, and whether what Whisper has said has resonated with you.
I mean, you're definitely right in that there's some rose-tinted glasses to when you first started FCing. I started FCing back in Providence in 2008, and back then roaming was extremely popular. It was something that happened a lot. And so being in Providence, which got roamed all the time, I was in high school when I started FCing, so I could only play like, you know, 5 o'clock after I came home after football practice till like 10 o'clock. And the fact that I could always come home and there would always be a fleet in Providence, no matter what, and you could fight it anytime you wanted was, that was a really fun time to FC. But the game, I don't know, as I've played more and I've gotten, you know, better at FCing and more sophisticated and, you know, understand the game mechanics better, I've definitely had some more fun fights that were, you know, more challenging and more complicated, you know, being in charge of 1,000-man fleets, things like that. But it was definitely a whole lot of fun when I started out. But that was just the era of the game. I mean, at least remembers PL were running around in sniper hacks. I mean, well, Cry Havoc at the time were probably doing sniper hacks too. But it was there was a lot more daily content, I would say, back then.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I started FCing basically when someone in PL died, and like all the backup FCs were like not being used anymore. It's like, fine, we can just let this idiot do it. Nah, I mean, I don't think I did that poorly, but I got everyone safe. No one really died. It was good. But my favorite time ever of seeing like the era of EVE that I thought was the best for me was when PL were fighting the old Northern Coalition. And essentially what we would do is we'd live in NPC space, basically where they are, and we'd find some of their allies, and then we'd hit a POS that was mining technetium. Back then it would make about between 5 and 9 billion. And we're talking like 7 years ago?
Yeah,
so that's a lot
like
of money.
That was like 2009, 2010, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a lot of money. So we'd hit one of those, and then we'd hit like 7 more, and then we just kill one in a day and 14 hours. The one that the bad guys weren't like very well prepared for. So it would be like 80 of us in Armor Hacks versus like 190 to 200 of them, but they didn't really know how to fight Armor Hacks. And it's like sometimes some of their FCs did, but they didn't really like the members didn't really want to take webbing ships because it's not flashy. So we just go in and have a good brawl, and you could just like set your watch by it. It was great. Every day at like 6 o'clock my time, I'd go in, have a good brawl. Sometimes we would whelp horribly because they drop like every Titan they had on us. But some days they wouldn't, and we'd be able to type in our, you know, in local chat, we'd be able to type plus one tech, rile up some jimmies, post about it, and then just go off owning in the highway. It was really fun. That era was really fun because you could generate timers very quickly. Unlike now when you hit a Citadel, it's like 2 weeks worth of fights, and they're kind of weird fights. Then you can just hit a tower. And if you're really good at it, you can do it in 5 or 10 minutes. If you're not, you'd lose your entire dread fleet that was trying to do it, which I thought was fun.
There was definitely that era of the game. It's the biggest difference I'd say between now and that era of the game is that best practices weren't really as developed as they are now. Even bad alliances kind of have a general idea of how not to get completely wiped these days. But like back then, I mean, Elise was right. There was a 3-month period when Armor Hacks were first developed by Raybutts that no one even understood what like fleet size SIG tanking was. Like no one even had thought to SIG tank with an entire fleet of cruisers. Like it'd been done in roaming by like small groups, but no like 150 man fleets. And for the first 3 months, like they just went up against sniper battleship fleets and killed every single battleship and wouldn't even like take damage. And they just wiped everybody. And, you know, like when they first pulled out Hellcats and were dropping them with triage against like 200 man Drake fleets, there was a lot more not knowing how to, the finer, or just, you know, the tactics, the strategies weren't as developed. You just get completely wiped sometimes.
So yeah. Drawing us back to the present time, as much as one of my favorite hobbies is getting people like Elise and Frogor to kind of tell us stories from the old days before I was around. So let's talk a little bit about the test deployment to Providence and kind of the Provi war that's been going on for really quite a while now. So I want to kind of start by posing this to Harvey, who's been patiently sitting quietly with the rest of our guests, as he's our peaky boy here from PL. And Peak has been the Corp in PL, at least from my perspective, before I took a break from me for my exams. That were very much leading kind of the boots on the ground aspect of the solve taking, so the Entosis Wars and what's been going on there. So Harvey, if you can tell us kind of just like a brief history of kind of like the what you've experienced in the solve war with Provi, starting with when we first invaded, going to now test involvement.
Okay, well, I joined with my corp, Peak, as you said, just before, well, I guess about the same time that PL moved from Jamunda over to Asar. So they just were basically switching the front, as it were, from, I think PL were trying to get fights out of test in catch from Jamunda, which is the curse side, switched it over to Asar and started pushing into Provi. So I came in into PL with my boys, fresh-faced and that, and just decided we were going to show everybody what we could do. So we just went to work. And some things were very, had parallels with old wars of old. You know, the Provi block was, a coalition, or is a coalition, if you like, depending on how you look at it. We took them apart, piece at a time. Many people remember that Jin made some plans and declarations. They said that they were going to focus on defending citadels. They weren't going to focus on defending Sov. And I should think that's, probably might have seemed like a good choice at the time. I and my boys, we rubbed our hands together because we knew what was going to happen. And they could defend their citadels when Progod came down to help them. They had their single point objectives and they could get everybody together, and that was good for them, and they held the line with that. But at the same time, we were destroying iHubs day in, day out. 2 iHubs a day was pretty much the pace of it. We chose to set that pace because from experience of Intosis, you know, just my boys and I, we know, just a small little unit, and you know, that suits us basically. A couple of IHABs a day, get cracking through it. And the thing that people don't understand is, I think, is that, you know, you may say you live in your citadel, but Proviblock, you know, and a lot of large alliances, coalitions and that, they may say they live in their citadels, but really, for the most part, they live in their havens. And if you take away their IHUB, they lose their havens. Oh, and then they start losing their numbers, you know. I mean, and so you pull them apart piece by piece like that.
I feel like, you know, Rackner and you and your crew and, like, myself are one of the few, like, FCs that actually think Intosis Warfare is good, you know, good gameplay. But I've been trying to explain that to people ever since Intosis came out. Well, ever since Citadels and Intosis have been the only two types of timers. Like, you don't have to go after Citadels if you can't capture them. Like, if you kill someone's IHUBs, they're eventually going to, you know, realize that they can't do anything in their space anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the main problem with, you know, Aegis Sov that people find is, you know, they say, well, this is boring. And it is boring when it's uncontested. If you're uncontested, it's boring. Anything is boring when there's no one at the other side contesting you. But as soon as you have two groups that want it, you know, and go for it, you can, you know, get some good fights going. Now, if you push it, in my opinion, if you push the scale right up to coalition wars, then things can get a little bit, you know, a little, the meta can twist into a very, you know, you get the fuzzy claws and some maybe not so fun tactics can become the most optimum thing to do. But anything lower than that very top scale of conflict, so, you know, alliance versus alliance, you know, down through mid-scale fleets, you know, 100-mans, 50s, 30s, whatever, as you go down the scale, you know, it works in a lot of different sizes. It's just, in my opinion,
I think it's
larger scale that it doesn't quite work with.
Well, it can. I think the biggest problem with the larger scale Intosis Warfare before the rework is that, you know, when you couldn't repair Intosis ships, it was just interceptor warfare as much as it. And, like, Tested developed a few ways to, like, split up 200 people across, like, four or five nodes with, like, 30 people on each node and try and counter the Intosis stuff, and it worked okay. But even then, like, just in general, it's really hard to organize that, and it's much easier just to get 200 people in interceptors and let one FC fleet warp them around.
That's a big point.
That was the worst part. All you needed was one guy to land one good ECM, and that's the end of it.
Oh,
you wasted five.
Yeah. Minutes.
I don't know about the ECM part. That never really stopped us. But
the ECM part did was give me many, many, many kill marks.
Yeah.
Lots of griffins
galore.
I mean, the game mechanic, you can really see, you know, like, how certain game mechanics, how, like, just because there's technically a way to counter things, if it's too complicated, if it takes too much work, then the easier, more time efficient method's going to win out in the long run. Just like, you know, a lot of mechanics have been like that, like tracking Titans back in the day. This is kind of a semi poor example, but they could technically be countered, but it was extremely difficult, and it took extremely skilled alliances and pilots to do it, and not everyone had it. And dropping tracking Titans is relatively not difficult. You just open a Sino and jump. So, like, tracking Titans became an extremely popular way to kill people. So, you know, if just throwing 200 people in interceptors and giving them the one FC to fleet warp around is an easy thing to do, and it's extremely difficult to counter, then the interceptor meta is going to win out. And it did over the course of 2 years. It became the primary way to do Intosis stuff.
Yeah,
so
that's the thing. I think, like, a lot of sort of traditional FCs, or just not maybe traditional, just like you say, you know, it's the path of least resistance as an FC is to just get everybody together and do a single thing with them. But to really, you know, thrive in Intosis contests and that, you have to have a lot more balls in the air, I think. But, you know, I'm not taking
it away. You got to split your fleet up at least five different ways. I mean, the way we viewed it before the changes, you had to control at least four nodes and have a fleet that could move independently and clear the other nodes that you weren't controlling. And that was, like, a minimum.
Yeah, I like the new changes with the repping and that. You know, it took away a lot of the bullshit mechanics that I was using you know, and exploiting, you know, the long range rapiers. We were, before we came to Provi, we did that little, we were messing around in Immensi against Red. I was actually working with Test a little bit just before.
No, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and we were just doing one corp and we were holding up and restricting an entire coalition. We wouldn't be able to do that anymore because of the repping. You know, they just did, we were blopsing around and using long range rapiers and being, you know, proper, you know, guerrilla warfare, not to be too cliche, but that was literally what it was, you know, and it really worked. But actually, you know, I'll be the first to admit it was very bullshit mechanic-y. It was kind of just,
yeah, I like the changes. I thought as important as the rep change was the move to 7% per node and less nodes. I thought that was one of the big problems. There was just too many nodes. If there was less nodes, the old system may have worked a little better.
So, Progod, I want to ask you about kind of Test's new involvement in Providence. So when PL initially invaded, Test turned up for a few of the good timers, but it wasn't, and Test were clearly on Provi's side in the conflict, but it wasn't the case of Test and Provi fighting side by side, both of them trying to push PL out in equal terms. It's only recently that we've seen the full attention of Test more coming on a more regular basis towards the Provi area. So kind of what was it that made you guys decide now was the right time? Was it the case that you were busy kind of securing other parts of your space? I know Fraternity have been doing some stuff in your area. Is it the case where you couldn't take expensive stations from your allies Provi without looking bad? So if PL takes them, you can take them back from PL. Like what's kind of like the timeline for Test in terms of the Provi invasion by PL?
I mean, we're going to attempt to take the stations and turn them into faction citadels and then unanchor them and leave. I mean, for the same reason that we didn't deploy up in the Providence in the first time, I don't think a lot of people understand how force projection works in the new meta. And Harvey was talking about, you know, as far as having people live in their space. So let's say 5-6 months ago, we deploy up to Providence and live up there. Which, keep in mind, means we can no longer stage and catch because we have to move our catch staging to Providence. And we probably diminish our ability to fight in Esoteria as well, which is where we actually live in mine and do all that stuff. Where's the end game there? PL at the time lived in LOSEC, and it wouldn't be very difficult to live out of a LOSEC station. We know they're capable of doing it. So we go up to Providence, and we defend timers, and we win timers for how long? I mean, there's no end game there. And to be able to actually defend a region, you have to be able to drive your opponent out. But when you live that close to LOSEC, that's a big problem. And yeah, maybe we could have hell camped PL with our entire coalition, and eventually they would have gotten bored and left. But that's not really sure how that would play out. That's kind of a big risk.
Plus, so, I mean, there's like literally no reason to save a coalition and like throw them on your back when they can barely stand on their own two feet.
Yeah, so that's the other thing, is like, it's not like I like Provi, and like I like I said, I started the game in Providence. Like Equinox, the current leader of CVA, he was in my first fleets. A lot of the CVA people helped get me on my first CSM. Like I have a good relationship with them, but they're not technically part of our coalition. Like we were allies and we had a mutual enemy that we both want to beat. I mean, we're always going to team up with Provi over PL, but they're not technically part of our alliance or our coalition. So we were there to help, but unless they want to sign an official agreement or something like that, we had no obligation to truly save them, like Elise said.
So, yeah. Plus, it's way more advantageous to fight in an area that you know is not your home, right? So if you can keep PL engaged in Providence, which is on your front lawn, so you can just shoot them whenever, you know, there's a big form up to keep your members happy, and you don't get to have PL throw the trash around in your backyard, then it's even better. It's like the win-win.
Yeah, then, I mean, I think it took us, when we were helping Provi, I think we kept y'all up there for like, what, 2 months or...
Yeah, exactly. So you got to get, or Test had to, Tappy, I should say, got to shoot PL on big fights, right? So they got their, you know, that little check marks marked off, and PL wasn't messing up with like Rorqual miners out in Esoteria, just trying to do annoying stuff in Faith Ablis or Omist or anything like that. And, you know, it's good. And then, so the neat thing is that if you help the Providence guys from the Tappy perspective, then, you know, that's going to be a good thing for you. You got, you got to help some people that you like. But if you don't and they end up collapsing, you can sort of say, hey, guys that were really good, you can come join me instead if you don't want to. You're not necessarily poaching them. You're just giving them a better option.
Yeah. So I'd love to hear from both of you, Elise and ProGod, as kind of the two respective like leaders of the two groups, PL and Tappy. ProGod mentioned kind of like the end game and what the goals are. So obviously asking Alliance leader to tell us what their plans are for the future is kind of like saying, hey, give us all your secrets. But like Elise and ProGod, what are your kind of like hopes for the Provi region? Obviously the faction citadels are a massive like monetary incentive as of now, but are either you looking to just throw the region back to the Provi coalition when it's done? Does Test fancy like keeping it for any reason after? Like what are your two respective end games here, as much as you obviously would be actually willing to say?
I think hilariously enough, like everyone has the same exact idea for Providence, right? Just grab as many stations as you can. I mean, obviously neither side is going to get 100%. So just grab as many as you can, unanchor them in the middle of the night, take them, and then leave, and then never look back. Just like, all right, see you later.
Give me the loot.
Like, the loot altogether, Jim was telling me he calculated at one point. It's something like 5 Alliance tournament wins or something worth of faction citadels.
I don't know. I don't think it's that much, honestly.
How much is that as the rigs, though? And if you want to reckon...
Well, no. So, like, a Fortizar by itself costs, what, 10 billion now?
Something like 10 or 12.
So just as regular Fortizars, that's 79 Fortizars, that's 790 billion. Plus, they also have bonuses that, as far as I understood that dev blog, that aren't, you know, related to the rigs that could probably inflate their value a little more. I imagine they won't cost that much when everyone's unanchoring like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of faction citadels and throwing them on the market. But eventually, I think the price will settle above a regular Fortizar.
I mean, it'll be cool just to have like 90 Fortizars, right? Like you could just drop them to do whatever stuff you wanted to do. If you just wanted to do some hood rat shit, just drop one of your free Fortizars, whatever, it's fine. And yeah, they are like the stats wise, they are better. They're a little bit harder to take, a little bit beefier.
I mean, assuming we even get like half of them, we won't have to build a Fortizar for ourselves for a while.
Yeah, and that's kind of the whole thing, right? So personally, when we started fighting Providence, I know there was lots of like herf blurf. Like I know Jintan was of the opinion that we came here to get the faction citadels. I was like almost 100% sure we'd never see the fucking changeover from stations to citadels. I was like, yeah, this is gonna happen in like 3 years, whatever. And then they showed up on the test server. Yeah, and then they showed up on the test server. We're like, oh, this is interesting. And they showed up on the test server right when we like started taking some Providence stations. And so there was a lot of tinfoil hattery going on, like, oh, PL's got some insider information. They're going to go steal it, like, when the patch comes out.
It looked pretty suspect, didn't it?
Yeah. But then they made the post that it's coming out on June 5th. And as soon as they did, we were like, nice. Everyone's going to come down and try and get a piece of Providence. This will be fun.
Yeah, I mean, my take on it going forward, you know, I think when we're all gone, you know, Providence is going to be for a short period at least, until it gets its stability back, it's going to be a wicked little hotbed of, you know, activity. You know, Provi Block is obviously going to think that it has the right to just take it all. It's God-given rights to the region, so they're going to come straight in and try and take their stuff back. Any other small alliances around, you know, that fancy a piece, you know, when we're all gone.
By the time we're done with it, it's just going to be a clean slate, man.
Exactly, yeah. It's exactly. That's what I mean. It's a fresh, scorched earth, plowed field, ready to be re-sowed with whatever they want to put in it, you know, and they can fight over the land. You know, there won't be any legacy stations, no iHubs, nothing. It's just going to be a complete, perfect clean slate. If I was a little, you know, alliance leader again of some crappy little alliance, I would love to get in there and have a crack at it.
Awesome. So before we move on to the next topic, Harvey, we have a little title in our notes backstage here called Lumio the Meme. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the legend Lumio. Lumio the Meme.
Lumio, the man, the legend, yeah. Well, I think most of the legacy guys have bumped into him as well. He's been around Catch, Provi, probably further afield. Other people must have bumped into him. But basically, he's just some guy, don't know who he is, but when he jumps into local, he's always PvPing. When he jumps into local with you, you know you're about to get a fight. 100% guaranteed. Jumps in local. When he sees a spaceship, doesn't matter what spaceship it is, could be a Titan, could be a fleet of 250 nightmares, he does not care. He says, "Let's do this!" in local, in capital letters. He fights. He explodes, maybe. He might explode you if you're unlucky or you're bad. And then afterwards he says, "You didn't heard the last of Lumio N. Trelevine," or whatever his name is. And that is his meme. He's done it so much. And he just seems to have like a great attitude to PvP. He's just going balls deep every single time, no matter what. You know, no holds barred, straight in with his pistons or his dummies, or he doesn't care. He's just a legend.
As long as he keeps doing it, he's never wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, I sat on a gate once. Sorry, I sat on a gate once in my favorite ship, my Nightmare. I'm just sitting there. Flying other alts around and things, not really noticing. And every maybe 2 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes, I got the shield alarm. I tabbed over to my Nightmare, and Lumio was there in another ship, some kind of spaceship. He did like a Sacrilege, a Tristan, a Sentinel, and he just did them back to back, one ship after another, and just like had a crack at me. You know, he was just trying different things. He tried tracking, disrupting me with his Sentinel and muting me, thinking that might work, you know. Obviously, I just exploded him repeatedly because I'm a murderer, but, you know, it was still, admirable to watch.
So he almost sounds like, you know, in kind of like the open world games, like your Fallouts or your Skyrims, he's one of those developer Easter eggs that you occasionally cross paths with and they're amazing and then you don't see them for like 3 months. Like the headless ghost guy from Skyrim, or like just like a beloved rare character in one of those games that the devs put in as kind of like a little in-joke or something, and you see them once in a while, and every time they pop up, there's a thread on Reddit saying like, "Oh, I ran into this famous like meme today." And Lumio is kind of like a real person being that role in EVE Online of just bringing a smile to everyone's faces when they see him in systems. Is that about right?
Yeah, sounds about right to me. Yeah, he certainly brings a smile to my face anyway.
That actually sounds like my whole CSM campaign, to be honest.
Well, before we get on to CSM talk stuff, I know Brisk and Mod are waiting patiently, but let's finish our kind of run around of the NullSec map stuff with talk about the Winter Coalition. So there's been a leadership transfer from Wind Spirits to Norris. Is that how you?
Yeah, Norris. They say Norris.
Norris.
Perpetual liar.
And so the plan is to take on Solar. Apparently it's a better time zone. I'll be honest, I'm a Gruntline member from PL who's also been doing exams the past 2 months, so I haven't a damn clue about this topic. So whoever is comfortable explaining the Winter Coalition.
Oh, I know a good bit about Winter Coalition.
Please go ahead, Brogod.
So where are we starting?
Well, just tell us, give us the TLDR of who they are at the beginning, and then tell us what's going on with them currently.
Oh, so they're, I think about... God, before the Triumvirate War started with FCON. So last year, right around this time, they started, they were running seminars, I guess is the best way to say it, to get people from Serenity over to Tranquility. I remember they were getting like 100 people every time they'd run a meeting, and they were teaching them how to do the proxy from China and all that. And they've just been slowly but surely bringing people over from Serenity to Tranquility. And Serenity's not technically dead yet, but it's definitely stagnated. I know they've brought a few alliances in full over from Serenity to Tranquility, people who are kind of looking for a new challenge. And they've just been slowly but surely building up their coalition. They remind me, I've been dealing with them for a while, they remind me a lot of early Brave, back when the guy, but who was the guy before Licton, the original leader, who started them? I forget his name, but he was extremely arrogant as well, and thought he understood Eve before, you know, he even kind of played it. They remind me a lot like that, because they seem to not give a shit in a way about norms or anything like that. They just kind of, you know, lie to their members constantly and break agreements and do whatever they really need to do, which is good and all, but it's kind of interesting just to see them operate. I mean, they just had an alliance meeting last week. I mean, Noros has sat there and told us people that he's dropped $70,000 on the game before. We have no idea if that's true or not. Apparently, he was running their entire SRP just through Plex that he bought. Let's see. Let me pull up the translation here. They kind of just like fly by the seat of their pants and say whatever comes to mind. They're Noros is kind of a lot like the Donald Trump of Alliance leaders as far as when he talks. So it's interesting to see it from a Chinese perspective. They just they were invading us. They're invading Amincia, but they never really got past the fact that all of our timers are not in Chinese time zones. So now they're turning around and they just canceled their NIP with XIX and they're going to invade XIX space. So they just kind of do whatever they need to do to keep content going. It's which is a good thing to do. It's just funny to watch it happen. It's definitely an alliance worth having a spy in. Like I would say, I can't think of a better alliance to have a spy in. Maybe GOTG right now. Maybe one of those alliances, but.
So I'm not sure in the context of EVE Online, being called the Donald Trump of Alliance execs is actually a compliment in it or an insult, or maybe somewhere in between. But having one in a game when we're all trying to have fun sounds absolutely fantastic. One of the things that comes to mind is it's cool to have an alliance or a coalition or a group that is culturally so different from the established best practices that we were talking about earlier. So like a Pro God, at least you guys talk about how kind of like everybody kind of grew and learned, this is how we act, this is how we do business. And then we've now got this huge influx of people from Serenity who are somewhat like the Russians, but to a greater degree where culturally how they operate and what they do is very, very different than what they're used to. And that provides kind of like new weird situations that we're not used to for better or for worse. Like Elise, do you have any thoughts on this?
I mean, I always think it's great when a new group comes into EVE because, you know, a lot of the times some of the mechanics in EVE or some of the game seems stagnant. And a lot of it is just from the mentality of the people behind the scenes and the people involved. They just don't want to try something new or whatever. So throwing someone like Fraternity into the mix, you have no idea how they're going to react. Like Brogod was saying, like, they just backstabbed their allies, like whatever. They announced like a random war and the time zone that they couldn't take. They're like, we'll throw everything on the ground for this. Like they just do random shit and it's great. I love that. It's adds a little bit of chaos into the status quo, which makes EVE way more fun.
Yeah, I got the opportunity to actually interview Noiris a couple months ago and get sort of his perspective on what it's taken to build up Winter Coalition and get these alliances. Primarily, it's going to be therapists, a fraternity, and ranger regiment that make up that alliance. They've come over from China because essentially one coalition, PIBC, runs the Serenity server, and a lot of the people who want to experience these wars in EVE, if you're a Chinese citizen, you have to come over here because it's not something that really exists in Serenity anymore. So.
It could exist. Like, that's ridiculous. EVE is a sandbox game. They're having the exact same problem that Elise was talking about. Everyone over there knows each other, and it's stagnating, and nobody wants to try something new.
Progra, I hate to cut you off, but that's incredibly, like, naive and, like,
okay.
Like lacks fundamental understanding of, like, the politics that are going on in China.
The like, politics in a video game?
Yeah. It's one alliance that controls literally everything, and no one has...
No, I get it. Like, I've known Wind Spirits for 4 years. Like, I understand it. I'm just saying, like, it's a sandbox video game. That sitting here and saying there's one alliance who controls a video game and then coming here and over to Tranquility and, like, they want to try, you know, we want people to try something new. Like, they could absolutely do that on their server. They're just choosing not to, which is fine. I prefer them to play on our server anyway. I think it's ridiculous. There's two separate servers. I know why, but you know, just sitting here and saying like, oh, you know, PIBC controls the entire server. You can't do anything. Well, no, I mean, you might have trouble doing something, but you know, there's nothing stopping a large group of people over there from theoretically getting together and fighting them. And I know they had a big giant BTEC R fight like 2 years ago where that was kind of settled, but I mean, theoretically, you could say the CFC controlled EVE from 2013 to 2014, but eventually they fell.
I think the big problem about Serenity is just it's not managed by CCP.
Yeah.
So you get like these kind of wonky ass game mechanics that just stay there. Like they're not on the same patches as us and stuff like that. Plus, they have like so many. ISK farmers, that the value of ISK has been depreciated. Like,
well, that's as I understand like, it. The ISK botting and the whole there's just no culture against ISK farming and RMT and anything like that. So that's where the real control comes from, is the fact that you know, when you can't go after someone's ISK sources, then, you know, you really can't do much there. So, and that was, as much as it pains me to say, CFC's legitimate argument against the whole I want ISK casino thing.
One of the weird things I always find about Serenity is one of their biggest difference between there and Tranquility is that nobody kind of went and lived in wormholes in the way that we do on Tranquility. So Tech 3 cruises are like crazy expensive and everything else is mega cheap. Like you can even, I'm pretty sure you can buy 80 ships just like off the market there. You can just get them. You don't have to win them from the Alliance tournament. You can just have 80 ships, as many as you want. That could be entirely wrong. But yeah, Serenity is a weird and wonderful place that's kind of back in terms of patches. What patch are they on at the moment? Does anybody know?
They're for the most part caught up. I think they have citadels and things like that. I don't know. I haven't tracked in like a year.
There was a time where there was like a small influx of like elite PvPers going from Tranquility
people?
Yeah, to Serenity because they were like, these people don't know how to play Eve the same way. So like around a year before a bunch of Serenity people started coming to Tranquility, a bunch of like people that you see from bringing solo back and just channels like that were going to play on Serenity because
I forget what the corp name was called. I just remember the ticker was West.
Yeah.
I was actually kind of part of the later influx of that. It was much old really? Crying experts. It was a really terrible like machine translation from English to Chinese. That was kind of a running joke. And a lot of the people were playing in the kind of the 2012 era where, you know, you could just run Drakes around and have fun, you know, roaming in kind of battle cruisers in that particular era. So I didn't really get to do a lot of that. I was kind of on the tail end of that, but it was a lot of fun for the people who were involved in that.
So let's move on from the Winter Coalition to talking about the CSM. It's taken a bit longer than usual because CCP have pushed it forward, but CSM season is upon us. The candidates were announced at FanFest this year and voting begins pretty soon, I think. We have with us two candidates, Brisk Rubal and Moderator. So the first thing I'd really like to ask you guys is kind of like, what made you want to run in the first place? Like, did you take a severe hit to the head? Like, do you not like yourselves? Like, what made you guys want to run for CSM?
Sure. So, I mean, you, of course, have experience with the CSM campaign. Apothne, you would have won had you not dropped out a couple years back. So you kind of have a good understanding of what it takes to be a successful candidate. I ran because I'm invested in wanting to have Eve be a game that's relevant and healthy and providing good feedback, especially now that there's going to be a new executive producer, and to be able to represent some of the groups of players that aren't already represented, but of course represent Eve players as a whole.
And to answer your first question, Apothne, I didn't want to. I didn't want to run. I told my guys for about a year and a half, look, I don't want to run for CSM. I think it's a bad idea. You guys don't want me to do this. And after, you know, a year and a half of them bugging the hell out of me, I kind of realized, you know what, I got the skills in terms of what I do for a living, in terms of politics, in terms of being able to listen and represent constituents and trying to influence a process that you don't really have a whole hell of a lot of control over. And I realized that what I do for a living, it makes perfect sense. And I think I could bring a lot to the CSM just by doing what I do in my day job. And for the same reasons, Moderator, I love the game. I want to see it keep going on. I want to make sure that we are providing as good feedback to CCP as we can, as well as making sure they understand what the issues are the players care about, and that they're hearing it from the players themselves and not just from reading it on Reddit or on the forums. So I think, you know, if a CSM candidate is not saying exactly what Moderator just said or what I'm saying, I don't know why they would be running you.
So as Moderator mentioned, I ran for CSM 11. So kind of to go over the past couple of years of the CSM, CSM 10 kind of has gone down in history as famously one that was not fun to be on.
Was that the Scion second year? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Progod, were you on there for that one?
I was on Scion's first year when he destroyed the CSM, or when he started the process.
Yeah, so needless to say, CSM 10 While they achieved some things, many things went very, very badly, and there was a big degradation of the relationship between CSM and CCP, of the community's relationship with the CSM, and it was in a really bad state. I think that a lot of the people that ran, therefore, for CSM 11 were, like myself, in wanting to just be solid communicators and be people that could work professionally, have good relationships. Like, I ran despite not being an expert, particularly in any area of EVE, but in that role of just being a reasonable communicator and having already established good relationships with, some people at CCP through my work with the Alliance Tournament. Like, since then, CSM 11 and CSM 12, who had a lot of incumbents between those two, have done, in my opinion, a fantastic job of kind of repairing that relationship, that kind of three-way relationship between the CSM, CCP, and the player base at large. So I'd love to hear Moderator and Brist kind of like, what do you guys want to develop kind of further? So we kind of had the repairing and the rebuilding and the kind of restoring of the integrity of the CSM, you might say, from 11 and 12. Like, how do you guys want to impact and develop the CSM in CSM 13?
Well, obviously, as you had mentioned, one of the primary goals is to make sure that the relationship with CCP and the CSM remains healthy, that we're an effective communicative body towards the community, we're an effective focus group, and that we don't backslide to what was going on in CSM 9 through kind of 11 was a period where there was a lot of breakdown in the relationship between the CSM and CCP. So now one of the next steps is to be more communicative in doing things like writing blogs with the community, talking to the player base from China and Russia that doesn't necessarily have representatives that are going to likely win in this event, but they're an important part of the game as a whole. We need them in the AU time zone, and to kind of communicate effectively about what it is that new patches will do to the upcoming ecosystem of the game, and just be a good voice of reason.
I think to add on to what Moderator just said, I think the big thing that I think everybody's concerned about is with Seagull leaving and having a potential new executive producer, we're going to have a new roadmap, we're going to have a new path forward. And I think everybody is reasonably going to be concerned about that and making sure that whatever CCP decides to do down the road is in line with the existing norms and mores of the game, and make sure that they're not doing anything. I think we're going to have to make sure that we get out there and explain what's going on and try to do our best to be a good liaison between the players and CCP. But I think at the same time, until we get an idea of what direction they want to take the game, I think it's going to be very hard for us to say one way or the other, you know, what we're going to hope to be able to accomplish next year. So I'm looking forward to hearing from them. All right, now you've made some personnel changes. Hilmar's back. What's on the next 5-year plan? What's on the next 2-year plan? What are you guys planning on doing for the rest of 2018, and then go from there and see what we can do to help ensure that process goes smoothly?
I will say that I still know quite a few of the people on the CSM, and I've heard pretty great things, especially from Sword Dragon. Sword Dragon is unique in that he was on the CSMs I was on, and he's on the CSM now, so we kind of have a way to compare to. And he says it's just night and day. Better considering that they've, you know, gotten past the whole Scion ordeal. I've heard CCP Grendel is a superstar. I've heard, you can just see from the changes they made in the last year. I mean, we got changes to the soft system. We got changes to jump fatigue. We got fleet fight notification stuff pushed out, and it's been really nice. I think I almost wish I'd run. Like, I think now is as good a time as any to be on the CSM. I'm kind of jealous of you guys. I think it's a pretty good time to be involved in helping EVE grow.
So just very quickly, we have somebody dropped in the chat called CCP Fozzie. So assuming it's the real dude and not somebody risking a ban by impersonating a dev, he told us that Serenity is currently running the September 2016 patch of EVE Online. So you can look that up and figure out what they've got from there. Yeah, so one of the questions I also want to ask you guys, Brisk and Mod, and Brisk, kind of especially you as well, as you have a ton of experience in real world politics, the act of running for the CSM and being on the CSM, there's a lot of like memes and videos. Brisk, you've released a fantastic video for your CSM run. That's like one of the best we've seen in a while. Like I'd say up there with Dunk Dinkle's I'm not running for the CSM video, which was also fantastic. Like, how do the both of you see the campaigning phase in kind of the modern era of the internet? So to what extent is it just kind of fun hanging around? Like, where do you see people campaigning and the strengths and weaknesses in certain approaches to campaigning for the CSM, starting with Brisk?
Well, the one thing I said when I got into this was, and one of the reasons why I didn't want to run, you know, until a couple months ago, was I knew that if I got in, I was going to run it like I would a regular campaign, which means I would buy ads. I would get out there. I'd try to do every TV show, every Twitch stream I possibly could. I'd do a commercial. I'd put a website together. And those are all the types of things that I've done. I think the biggest issue for me being just another player who really hadn't made a name for himself, unlike Moderator, who's famous and a great eventee, talking head, I didn't have any of that. So I'm trying to build name ID just so that people know who I am and who I'm with and why I'm even bothering to try to do this. That, I think, was the hardest part to get into this race. But I think I've tried to do my best to make sure that I am not trying to come in here and claim that I am the smartest guy in the room, that I know more about Eve than anybody else. Moderator has forgotten more about Eve than I've ever learned. And a lot of the other CSM candidates can say the same thing. What I'm trying to do is have fun with it. I'm trying to be funny. I'm trying to be self-deprecating. I want people to know that I am willing to listen to them and accept that I don't know everything. And I mean, to a certain extent, I've even gotten in trouble for that because I'll say, well, what do you think is the biggest issue? And then folks are like, oh, you got to tell me what you care about. Well, I care about a lot of things, but I want to know what you care about. Tell me what you care about. And I think that's really what I'm trying to put through in this campaign is I want to listen and be a good liaison, but I don't want to push any ideas beyond what I've already put out there as my talking points. Because in the end, a lot of this is going to come down to what's on CCP's roadmap. If we get out there and start talking about, I want to push this, you know, and that's not on the roadmap, then we're not going to talk about it.
I got to ask you, if you don't mind, how much have you talked to former CSM members about what the CSM is like?
I have had a lot of conversations with Sort. I've had hour-long conversations with Malkanus. I've talked to
a great CSM member.
And he's given me a lot of great advice and explained a lot of the stuff that he saw and concerns that he had and ways that I should be reaching out to folks. So Malkanus is kind of my rabbi. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't know have any idea really what I was doing.
Well, if you learn it from Malkanus, that's a pretty great thing. But I do got to say, and I'm sure Malkanus may have told you something along the lines, like when it comes, a lot of the CSM is the summit.
Right.
That's where you get most of your work done. And you don't have time during the summit to reach out to people who will know better and kind of get their opinion on things. So like, and I said this when I ran on CSM, it ends up being in a certain way more of a focus group than kind of a community communicator. It's changed a lot since then, but when it comes to the summits, that's kind of it. In-game knowledge matters a lot. Being able to speak from your own experience matters a lot. So that's, I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. If you're worried about like, I don't know too much about certain areas.
Well, what I would say is I do my homework. And I think the biggest thing that I'm trying to make sure that I do before I go in any of these meetings is take a look at the agenda, make sure that I'm aware of what's going on, that I've done my homework. I've gone out, I've talked to people before the meeting. So I'm not going to be able to do that while we're sitting in a meeting room. But also at the same time, I played the game since 2006. I've done almost everything there is to do at some point or another. And the things that I haven't done are things that I know I haven't done. And I have to reach out to folks beforehand to find out about. A lot of what I've been doing lately is NullSec PvP. That's my passion. That's what I like to do. That's what I spend the most time doing. But I know that there's a whole hell of a lot more of the game than that. And I would know that if elected, all of us are going to have to represent more than just what our comfort zone is. I'll do my best to get out of that comfort zone and find out things from other players, find out things from the community ahead of time so that in those focus groups, I'm not just sitting there with my thumb in my ass.
Yeah. I'm not saying you're not up to it. I'm just saying, like, I don't know how much Malkin has impressed that upon you, but it is like...
Oh, it was the first thing he said. It was literally the first thing he said to me.
So moderator, you're not new to the EVE spotlight from your Alliance tournament commentary. For example, like the sad moderator meme is like probably my favorite meme to come out of that Alliance tournament, which was what, Alliance tournament 14, I want to say?
Yeah, that's correct.
So like, how has running this CSM campaign been for you? Like, what do you feel like, what were you expecting that happened in running for CSM? What has been kind of like new? They're like, oh, I didn't expect this to happen whilst campaigning for CSM. Like, well, like, what's your experience been of it so far?
Well, my experience in and of it so far is that I'm just building off of what I've already been continuing to do with some of the podcasts I'm doing, some of the interviews I've been doing, and then the blogs that I've been releasing, talking about upcoming patches and things that are going on in the game right now. I've got another one I'm in the process of working on right now about the mutaplasmid modules and how they'll affect the economy and the overall game mechanics and interactions of combat. So one of the things that you're kind of hinting at is that the way that you run for CSM has fundamentally changed, especially given that the format is now a 10-member group instead of a 14-member group. I can pretty much already tell you right now who five or six of the CSM reps will be, and that's because right now you need to have a combination of either Space Fame, Block Vote, or some sort of major position in an alliance to actually get elected, because you need roughly 2,000 votes to pass the threshold to get in the top 10. And I now have to continue to canvass to a lot of the groups that aren't necessarily being hit by the pool of candidates that are out there right now. So for me, that's going to a lot of these LoSAC and Wormhole groups. LoSAC and Wormholers didn't even get a summit at the last CSM meeting. So there's a lot to be touched on there. Of course, I don't just focus on those things for even small gang, but they are areas which are more in my wheelhouse, I think, than for a lot of other candidates.
I mean, so again, I haven't actually been on the CSM, at least and ProGod have, so they can hopefully back me up on this. But aside from being at the top of a block ballot, which is the most useful thing to actually getting on the CSM, I'd say the second most useful thing is having a body of work to point to. So for example, when I ran, I'd been writing articles on Crossing Zebras, and I was known for doing my work in the Alliance tournament. So that is something that you can historically point to and say, this is the thing I have been doing already before I was trying to convince you to vote for me. I think a lot of the problems that first-time runners have, and I think Brisk might suffer from this to some extent, is that you haven't got that huge thing that's been in the public domain to point to. I'm not saying that makes it a bad idea to vote for any of these people. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that it's harder to run if you don't have that body of work to point to. It's more difficult to acquire people without that name recognition.
Almost like a real election.
Man, I had to run 3 times before getting elected. I ran for CSM4, just got completely zonked. CSM5, I was like the first alternate, which they never used, even though they threw someone off. So I was useless. And then CSM6, I finally got to be like the actual, back in the day, it was the like main candidates and then alternate candidates. I was like an alternate candidate, and someone already bailed or always bailed from the first 7. So I got to fly out to Iceland and be at the summits. It was great. And then CSM7 was the first time like I ran and I actually got on without any like asterisk.
Just because I love the story, Elise, will you tell the lovely audience who may not have heard it, your costume for, I think it was your first CSM summit, was it?
And like, the costume you had? I'm an idiot, right? And I come up with idiotic, hilarious ideas. So my plan for going to the CSM6 summit was like, man, all these guys are nerds. It was me, the Mitanni, Two Step, some guy from Razor, X-Death, and Celine. That was the people going to the CSM summit. And I was like, man, you know what would be really funny? These people think I'm some weird nerd, so I'm gonna dress like a weird nerd. So I had like a fedora, and I had like a white seersucker suit. I was like, yeah, and I had like a bright purple shirt. I was like, yeah, this is what people are going to see when I first get off the plane. Then I'm going to change into normal clothes because I'm a normal human being. Then I suddenly lost my fucking baggage for 3 days. And my alternatives were buy like some $9,000 shirt from the Icelandic tourist shop, or just be a stubborn idiot and wear the same dumb shit I was wearing, which is what I ended up doing.
Oh my God.
Because I wasn't very smart.
I never heard that.
So the first time I met like any CCP person ever, or any of like an EVE player in real life, I was wearing like a fedora, like a, actually, I don't think it's a fedora. I don't know what the actual cult thing is. I'm not a hat aficionado, but I was wearing one of those and a white seersucker suit that didn't fit at all because I just got it off the rack.
So you're saying you look like Jin Tan when you got off the plane.
I mean, Jin Tan actually has fitted suits, but I was very Jin Tan-esque in how ridiculous I looked. And so it was the first time I had met CCB Fozzie, and the first time I had met CCB Rise. And I have no, they must have thought like, what is wrong with this person? But luckily they didn't judge me too hard for it. So I was able to rebound.
Again, you guys heard me earlier say I love poking older EVE players to get them to tell us cool stories. And like stories like that are the reason why I love poking people to do that. Sorry for putting you on the spot there, Elise. But yeah, so obviously, everybody listening, please do consider moderator and Brisk for your votes, as you should consider everybody running for ZSM. Ballot and block voting is a part of the game, but in my personal opinion, take that as a source of information, but not your overriding principle, unless that's what you want to do. Vote for who you want, vote for who you think will make the game the best game. And we have two examples of wonderful EVE players who are willing to put in the time and effort into the CSM, which is a big, big, big job. Like, I don't think we've mentioned yet today, like, it is a lot of time of your real life that you probably lose from playing in EVE and all kinds of other stuff to actually be on the CSM. So in my opinion, people who do the job and don't just not turn up, like even if they don't do an amazing job on the CSM, they are doing
you get some things out of it.
Just by how much time you have to put in.
I put software consultant on my resume and it definitely helped. Like
I'm not gonna lie, I have all the 80 stuff I've done on my CV under like very skewed names. Like, yeah, I was a consultant for a CCP in their broadcasting division or some crap like that.
I'm just hoping that maybe I can win an election for a change. That's all. That would be a compelling change of pace for me.
The interesting thing about the CSM is like, or rather the unfortunate thing is, because it's been around for so long, people have like people who are not involved at all have like all these weird views about what it is and what it isn't. And they kind of try and speak with authority about what it isn't. They're like, oh, it's just a popularity contest, or, oh, it's just a public relations thing. Like, no, it's actually not. You actually can do some good there. Obviously you don't get to like make the game from the CSM. It's not like a developer position, right? But it is hugely important and you should be able to
have effect. Yeah.
Yeah, like you absolutely need, like, so the problem with the CSM is the reason the huge ballots and block voting works is because like most people don't bother to vote because it's kind of like a pain in the ass. Like, oh, I gotta select like 11 dudes. I'm like, no, just select like two people you like. Just put two people in that list. You don't have to fill it out. Just do a little bit of research. Don't, I mean,
most
even if you have to pick
get
someone
past the
based,
third choice,
no.
Anyway, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Just put names up on there. Just be like, whatever. You can do this. It's important.
It's kind of like, I suppose, in real life, that if most people don't vote, the only people voting who have very are the ones who have very, very extreme beliefs and therefore are compelled to vote. So the only people that vote would be politicians and people with extreme beliefs. So if the average person then doesn't vote, you are going to get the result of only extremists and politicians voting, which is a weird outcome for the people ruling your game. So do get involved, do vote. Brisk Mod, do you guys want to say anything on that point of at least Pro Gods of Mine?
I mean, at least from my perspective, this is the same as real life. I mean, I ran elections in the largest jurisdiction of Virginia for 2 years. Voter turnout in big elections could get up in the 60s and 70s, but in the small elections, we're lucky if we crack 10. So making sure people realize that, yes, your vote matters. It does do something. CSM is not just a sinecure. You actually have a role to play, and the players do have an influence over the process through their CSM members. That's important. So trying to keep that cynicism out and trying to get folks to show up and vote is a big deal. And I'm happy that CCP gave us a full 7 days of voting this year. I think we were all concerned that they were going to reduce the size because this season has been a lot longer. But I think at the very least, if we're all out there pounding the pavement saying, hey, get out the vote, maybe we'll see a little uptick in turnout this year.
Yeah, obviously, a longer CSM campaigning period is going to benefit those who put a lot more time and effort into campaigning. You'll continue to see a lot more from me, especially now that my finals are just now beginning to end. From now until when the polls close, continue to push through that. So it's a lot of work, and I think we'll see some more front runners emerge from those who continue to put in that time and effort and show that they're putting in the time and effort that they would need to be an effective CSM representative for the game.
Fantastic. So now we are going to move on to our final bullet point for the day, which is kind of loosely titled Modern Warfare and EVE. So we happen to have a lot of FCs and a lot of people that are directly involved in PvP and fleet combat in the game. I'm probably the least PvP person actually here, now I look at it, and I just PvP in EVE, so that's interesting. So with Whisper here, and I want to bring you back, having been so quiet for so long, we kind of have somebody brand new, fresh on the FCing scene. We have someone like Brisk, who's been doing PvP for a very long time in EVE. But I don't know, Brisk, have you ever moved up in kind of like the FCing role, or have you been kind of stringently in the fleet member role?
I have FC'd a couple times, and everybody's died, so I try not to talk about it.
We have a moderator who is kind of a small gang solo alliance tournament specialist. For example, Ahmad ran the Exodus AT team for, what was it, AT11, AT12, something?
It was Alliance Tournament 11.
I mean, AT11. Cool. And then Elise Progrod, we've already said, are kind of like long history alliance leaders in NullSec, you know, run campaigns, FCs. So what I'd love to talk about, and we touched on this earlier, is when Aegisov first came out, there were these kind of like, there was a big outcry. Some people thought it was amazing, some people thought it was less than amazing. There were the quick go-tos developed, like the interceptor fleets, you know, the insta-claws, all that going on. But I haven't heard recently, and that's probably just because I can't listen to every damn EVE podcast, kind of like where we are in the current state of what the metagame is for Warfare. So like, especially with the changes that come through, I haven't seen that many Reddit threads, that many articles about like, okay, now that this change has come through, this is generally what is happening. So I'd love to hear kind of any of you speak on kind of what the current state, what the current meta of how people fight in EVE is over Sov and over timers.
Well, just to be from a line member's perspective, I will say from our experience, hacks are the new thing again. We are back to using hacks everywhere, and I think every group has a doctrine now that has a hack in it. But ProGod's shaking his head, so he can tell me I'm full of shit.
No, they're definitely good. They're definitely good, but you know, it's still early in the meta to see how they develop. I've seen so far you can beat the assault damage control pretty easily with newts. So
we've done that.
I've seen some people running AB hack doctrines and just getting shredded by anything with newts. I think they're really effective as an MWD doctrine, but then you have to consider what your logistics are going to be. It's, you know, you can have these heavy tank hacks and, you know, amazing ADC skills and have everyone be really disciplined with it. But if your logistics are just, you know, MWD scimitars that anybody can track and they only have 80k EHP or less than that if they're MWD, then it really doesn't matter because they're just going to kill all your scimitars and then you have to warp off anyway. So I think they're definitely cool. I think the ADC is an example of good game mechanics. It's different. It opens up more options. I'm not saying it's not, you know, it couldn't, maybe it couldn't, you know, be balanced in some way or another way. I don't think it's, we've worked with it enough to know if it's unbalanced or not. It's definitely strong, but it's definitely beatable, which is exactly where you want it to be, in my opinion. But I think it's more of this in the game where you have different variety, different options, more tools in the toolkit for FCs. It's always a good thing. I like it a lot.
One of the cool things about it is it adds a bit of a skill cap to Eve as well, right? So instead of just orbiting an anchor and then shooting and like having the FC make all the complicated calls and doing all the complicated skill stuff, like you now get to push a button that determines whether you live or you die. Like that, I mean, think that's pretty cool.
Definitely. More things like that. I mean, at least I was someone was complaining to me the other day and I was explaining to him, I'm like, you used to not have an align button. You used to just have to find the Celestial and align to it on your own. So.
It's really kind of neat. I've been playing with the ADC a little bit for low sec stuff. I think it's going to be for small gang stuff. I mean, we've seen Black Legion use mutants. I have a feeling that Black Legion are going to be some of the only people using mutants. But I think Serbs and Ishtars are probably going to be what most people use.
I lost to mutants last night, but so I agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, Serbs and Ishtars, they're neat because, like, I mean, as Progad was saying, you kill them by killing their Logi, but that's essentially how you kill most things, right?
GOTG has been using a lot of Eagles, and it has not been effective.
Yeah,
Eagles... Somehow I'm not shocked that Eagles are bad. Like,
yeah, Eagles, I don't know. We were actually having a chat in the 00 FC channel the other night where I think the only way you can make Eagles good, and I don't think they're good, is to use them you got to use their bonuses. They're long range snipers. You got to fight with them at long range, which means they need to be MWD fit. But a lot of people aren't MWD fitting.
I'd love to bring you back to the conversation. Like, again, because you're a younger FC, you might not be able to comment on like how things have changed. But like, what do you currently love flying? Like, if I told you. You get to magically create the circumstance of what fleet you're running and what you're fighting tonight. What do you want to fly? How do you want to fly it? Who do you want to be shooting?
So it's actually kind of funny that you ask this because, as everybody knows, there is the Goonswarm FC tournament that we did last month, and we're also doing it this month. And I actually got chosen to do it this month and as one of the 8 FCs to participate. So I had to create my own doctrine, you know, from scratch. Couldn't copy, you know, any other doctrine. And I decided, not so smartly, to go with a procurer fleet. So I chose procurers with no drone link augmenters. And I FC'd from Menorca with, you know, Logi and whatnot. So I definitely would not do a procurer fleet again, as far as warfare is concerned now. It was a total gimmick, risked it, you know, lost. But as far as actual doctrines go, I would say I really enjoyed running that Hurricane fleet for the X7 fight. So if somebody told me, you know, you can run a fleet right now, I would probably take out Hurricanes.
I'm assuming Shield Arty standard.
Yeah, yeah, Shield Arty, you know.
Does CFC still run those 650 Arty Hurricanes? I mean, Armor Hurricanes?
I think that there might be one of them out there. I think that might have actually been retired. I think you're talking about what used to be our Sandy fleet. But running the new Hurricane fit like we did for the X7 fight, that was really fun. Like I said earlier, first time that I'd ever had, you know, a couple hundred flights of fighters coming at me. There was even a point in the fight where one of the other FCs is saying, you know, we need you to kill Grams. And I start scrolling through players. I'm like, who's Graham? Because I didn't know what Grahams were. So so that was a fun little interaction right there.
That helps.
I got to give you, Whisper, I got to give you credit. You got balls, man. I have been playing this game for 10 years. I would never be willing to take a fleet out like that. A handful of times I've done it. It's begun. Everybody else has died, and I was the last one standing, so I did it. But I got to give you credit. That's awesome.
I actually didn't know what even was going to be going on. You know, I mean, it was just like, all right, you're going to go up here, you're going to shoot Sfortizar. They didn't say, you know, maybe they'll drop Titans or, you know, or Capitals on you. Nobody mentioned that really being as a possibility until the carriers came in. They're like, oh, well, if they drop carriers, then they're going to drop supers and then they're going to drop Titans. I'm like, every single time that something new got dropped, you know, like, you know, when it went from carriers to super carriers, I'm like, what do I do now? You know, because I had no clue what I was doing. I actually had, Alterari Phoenix, who's much more experienced FC than I am, was kind of, you know, in the back going like, okay, now you do this. And then they drop Titans. I'm like, well, what do I do now? You know, like there's 24, Right, like there's 24 Titans on field, and he's like, eh, whatever, the Fortinet's got 4% left, just kill it. It's like, okay, you know, and I was seeing from a Drake, because I have not very many things trained up. So of all the ships I could possibly be seeing from, the Drake ended up being the best option for me at that point in time. And of course, that's just, you know, funny in itself.
Whisper, do you want to tell the uninitiated what grams are?
Yeah, so turns out grams are superiority fighters. So once somebody pointed that out to me, I went back to my fighter tab and started, you know, killing those so they could stop wiping out all the drones so quickly. And because I just didn't know. They just said, you know, kill grams. And I'm literally looking through the player list for, you know, some red character named grams or something. And then they're like, do you not know what grams are? I'm like, no, I don't.
Dude, I didn't know what grams are. I've never owned a super.
So yeah, exactly.
Super explaining it to me, dude. Cool. So I've almost forgotten my next point, but we have Matrol actually back with us. I don't know if he's joining comms, but he's back from breakfast, I'm assuming. Good to see him back. Let's talk a little bit more about, we talked a little bit earlier about kind of Intosis and how there were some changes that came through. So for example, you can now rep people with the Intosis module active. So I don't know who wants to speak to this, but what is, say, kind of the new meta for going and doing Intosis wars? So previously it was you'd go in and you'd see a rapier running around at 200 kilometers, right? Like if I go to a Plex, if I go on a Sov Intosis fleet, what am I likely to see these days?
Well, from what I've noticed, even just because I thankfully was playing before the complete change to how Intosis kind of works right now. Obviously, before you could, you know, it was clown shoes all over the place and you would fly, you know, somebody'd fly Griffin in, burst, you warp off. Well, you can't do that anymore. You can't just burst jam all the Intosisers all the time. So I've noticed, you know, and it's not like a secret or anything, but we've been using like Drakes to do it. Like, unironically, just using Drakes because they can defend themselves. They're tanky enough to deal with a problem for long enough for a fleet to actually show up and help them. So
we were killing French Connection last night. They were in Sveeples doing Intosis-ing. I don't know why, but
I mean, Drakes were used beforehand. I think the real difference is, like, so you used to be able, you basically have two situations with Intosis. Either you have capital superiority, and therefore you can put heavy assets to Intosis, or you don't, and you need to have mobile assets on Intosis. So it used to be you used to run Intosis faxes if you had capital superiority, but and you had the 10 times modifier, whatever it is, it makes the Intosis module take forever to spool up. But now you can just run a heavy tanked battleship with an Intosis fax and get a shorter spool up, so that kind of helps out a little bit. Honestly, the tactics are, most of the tactics still apply. You can still do a really fast Intosis ship and pull range if someone comes in, or an Intosis fax. The difference is now you can put like a small gang on there of like 5 to 10 people and not worry about losing your Intosis ship. I'm really interested to see who's going to be the first group, because there's not that many nodes anymore to put like extremely elite 5 to 10 man comps on each node that you can't just like send interceptors at, because that's the biggest thing, is you can now counter the interceptor blob by having really heavy tank ships. Like T3s could probably pull it off, remote rep battleships even, depending on how you want to do it. Just anything that can kind of tank a claw volley and then that kind of DPS, which could be difficult, and maybe something that can clear it. 5, 10, 15 people, there's a fleet comp inset in there that can make it work. And if you can counter the 100 claws and also not have to put faxes on the field, that's the biggest difference, I think. Otherwise, not much has changed. You still either need to be in like a really fast ship that can pull range if enemies are getting close, or a super heavy tank ship like a fax. But I mean, the rep thing, I think the meta hasn't fully developed yet. It's going to be about one or two more Intosis wars before it really kind of develops, but the options are definitely there.
One of the neat things is
restriction of range down to 50k for the T2 affected it.
Yeah, somewhat, but you know, you still pull like unless the Scepter FC is extremely good at getting his probes out, and some of them are, but most of them aren't. Let's be honest. You know, the range thing wasn't that big of a deal.
No problem. I was just gonna say, with, you know, allowing repping now, it kind of changes the small scale meta quite a bit. As ProGod was saying, for the big one, you could just shove a capital on there and whatever. it's a capital. You're going to have to escalate, and the one with the biggest super cap umbrella will win that. But with the smaller and medium gang stuff, before you would have to take a ship, and it was always a little bit wonky. You'd always have this like this sore thumb of a ship that would have to be a brick tank, more or less, to survive for quite a long time. So you see like the prophecies and the drakes and stuff like that mixed in with like a normal fleet. Now you can just take a normal fleet and shove an Entosis mod on just one of your regular ships. So the people doing the Entosis, it feels more like a small gang fleet more than just some gimmicky Entosis stuff. So you can just take, if you want to take like a, if you're Guardians of the Galaxy, you want to take an Eagle fleet out, you can actually take an Eagle fleet out and one of your Eagles can just have an Entosis mod and your logistics wing will keep that guy alive, right? Like, obviously I'm not suggesting people take Eagle fleets out. Actually, I am. Yeah, everyone take Eagle fleets out.
Please do. That would be great. We'd love that.
But yeah, it's less than, now it's more like PvP in the game instead of like some weird specialized things. Like you'd have to basically take a Hyperion or a Prophecy to Entosis before. Because the goal back then, before the change, was you need the enemy to form up something that you can then fight. Right? And what the enemy, as we've been saying, would usually do is just take interceptors because A, they can warp fast and they can move around the region pretty quickly, and B, like they're hard to catch and they can kill most Entosis ships. Now that that's not the case necessarily anymore, the meta is probably going to develop into more sort of brawls that you would, hopefully it'll develop into more brawls that you're more accustomed to seeing for like other fights that were similar, like not necessarily POS bashes, but things like that, going over an objective.
So one thing to kind of clarify for the listeners is some of the changes that we're discussing right now came in March. So a part of that March balance pass, we also got to see some interactions change with how Entosis worked. So Tech 2 Entosis went from 250 kilometers down to 50 kilometers, less node spawned, and it's now more difficult to jam ships doing them. So there are a lot of just relatively easy fixes that are just kind of like, okay, we can just go into the database and tweak some numbers here. They weren't things that required a major code rewrite or rework of how the fundamental systems work. And it's gone a good way to making the actual player interactions a lot more bearable.
Their quality of life changes, definitely, when it comes to actually doing the Entosis. I think it's great. Like I thought the other system, like people were like half blurring, like, oh, it's so bad, it's the worst. Like, it's not, like the old system wasn't bad. As Harvey was saying before, it was shitty and boring when it was uncontested.
That's the problem. Everything is shitty and boring when it's uncontested.
It's, like, yeah, that the was old a system, stupid fucking argument.
The old system was terrible when it was uncontested. The mega old system was like the worst shit in the world when it was uncontested.
Yeah, 64 large towers in a single system. Like,
yeah, have fun. Have fun killing that stuff.
Wow. But I mean, at least this time, so we're just making small quality of life iterations on something like this. And I like it. I think it's good.
So let's run down a little bit of news. We have on June 4th, I believe, is CSM voting begins. Am I wrong there?
That is correct. June
4th. Fantastic. So make sure you pay attention to who you're going to vote for. The voting lasts for a week, as we said before. So really consider your candidates. Read their Evo posts. There's a lot of stuff that's going to be going around more and more and more as we lead up. So make sure you're informed and vote for who you think is going to make Eve the most an even more awesome game than it is already. On June 5th, literally one day after, that is going to be the change to the faction Citadels being able to pull, which is why so many people are interested in Provi. So that's a good day to look at the scoreboard, see who got the most loot, made the most money out of that change coming through, which is very, very exciting. We also have some EVE meets to mention. We have EVE Atlanta going on next Saturday, which is great. If you are in that area, go hang out at EVE Atlanta. I'm sure it's a fantastic meet. I won't be going because it's a million miles away and I have an exam, but I'm sure there'll be tons of cool EVE players to go hang out with there. And now, unless anyone has anything else they desperately want to discuss, we're going to run down shoutouts. We do have a time, so feel free to plug yourselves and whomever you wish as we go down. Brisk Rubal, if you start us off.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you to all the moms out there. Today's Mother's Day in the United States. I assume it's Mother's Day everywhere else. Thank you very much to my beautiful wife, Kayanne, who let me come on the show, even though it's Mother's Day. I had to give her a shout out. She's a great mom. To our mining intern, Nick. And I want to thank you guys all for letting me on the show. It was a lot of fun.
Pleasure to have you, buddy. Moderator?
Yeah, of course. Shout out to my mother, my grandmother, and all the women out there who, you know, are mothers. Shout out to the people who have been helping me with my CSM campaign, and you'll be continuing to see more from that over the next couple weeks.
Great. Elise?
I want to give a shout out also to my mom. The only Eve thing she's ever watched me do is boundary violate and finish last place in a an Eve tournament. And she told me, like, this is the dumbest shit ever, and she's never going to watch anything again, and she hasn't. So shout out to my mom, who will never hear this, but she's the best.
McLeod, do you want to make a shout out? I don't know if you can voice on air.
I can voice on air, but you know, just shout out to my corp mates in TGrad and to Initiative, and vote Brisk for CSM.
Thanks, McLeod.
Progod, who are your shout outs, buddy?
First off, am I the only one who heard your, like, the intro to the show when you were talking about how Matterall was away from Mother's Day stuff and then immediately texted my mom because I had totally forgotten? Like, does that make me a bad son? But I would say shout out to the test fleet that's out there right now watching the show, reinforcing all the PL stations. Keep it up. Keep creating those timers. Good work. Another day.
They're not PL stations. They're your former ally stations.
Ah, yeah. Reconquista.
I gotta get my spinning bike out.
The Spin Master 9000.
Cool. Whisper, any shout-outs, buddy?
Yeah, basically just the Karma Fleet guys, you know, everybody that's in Karma Fleet that's helped me, you know, learn how to play the game. People like Xing Li, Alterari Phoenix, you know, definitely have been people who have been pretty monumental, I'd say, in helping me learn how to FC and simply, you know, play the game without wanting to quit. Because I'll tell you, that first month was rough, you know, living with a bunch of random nobodies out in Curse was it was rough, and it kind of made me want to quit. But I you know, all those Karma Fleet guys definitely have been really helpful for me. So
in England, Mother's Day is actually on Sunday the 31st of March this year, but I will give my mom and my grandmothers a shout out anyway. Thank you all very much for coming on the show. We had some amazing guests this week, and thank you for letting me host you guys through it, despite it not being my usual job. I would like to shout out the article I just released on Crossing Zebras, which is my Alliance Tournament History's PL versus Hydra Part 2. So go check that out if you have any interest at all in the Alliance Tournament. Part 3 will be probably released next week at some point. And we also have Matterall popping in, returning. What would you like to talk about, buddy?
Hey, man, I just want to say thanks a lot. You saved my bacon. It was Mother's Day, so I had a run off right before the show. And so Apothny got handed the show right as we started. And so McLeod and Apothny, thanks for picking up the slack and just doing it. Good job. And happy Mother's Day.
And of course, Harvey had to drop out before we came to the end of the show, but shout out to him for coming as well. Matterall, is there anything you'd like to say for the end of the show? Any wrapping up stuff that I don't want to do?
Just want to say thanks to all our supporters on the Patreon, especially to our Angel supporters. There's only 4 or 5 of them, and they put in the big bucks to help us upgrade equipment and stuff. So thank you guys very much.
So there we go. I believe the show usually continues with those of the guests that want to hang around on the TIS Discord. So if you want to come out, hang out with some of the people that we're chatting today, do come and join us on the TIS Discord, which I'm sure somebody will helpfully post in the stream chat. But thank you very much for listening. And I believe we'll be back next week, won't we, Matterall?
That's right. We're back next week.
All right. See you guys. Thanks for coming.